This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. In today's shadow, we hear more from Edward Snowden. We'll be speaking live with national security whistleblower Bill Binney, formerly of the NSA, and we'll be taking a look at piracy in the air lanes by President Barack Obama against the head of a sovereign state, President Evo Morales of Bolivia. All that and more. This is The Shadow. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And today there are many developments in regard to the case of NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. At this point in time, we are receiving unconfirmed rumors that he may possibly have accepted asylum in Nicaragua. He has been offered recently asylum in Bolivia, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. This is based on a report from a Kuwaiti news agency citing sources from Interfax, the Russian news agency. We'll keep on top of this as details develop, if indeed that report is true. That leaves, of course, the logistical difficulty of Mr. Snowden's transit from the international section of the Moscow airport to any intervening states where there may not be another force down of an airplane by the agencies of the Obama administration and the State Department, as was done with President Morales' plane over the weekend. Also today, The Guardian has just released the second part of an interview with the whistleblower Edward Snowden, conducted by Glenn Greenwald and Laura Portrius. We hear that now.
Have you given thought to what it is that the U.S. government's response to your conduct is in terms of what they might say about you, how they might try to depict you?
I think the government's going to launch an investigation. I think they're going to say I've committed grave crimes. I've, you know, violated the Espionage Act. They're going to say, you know, I've aided our enemies in making them aware of these systems. But that argument can be made against anybody who reveals information that points out mass surveillance systems, because fundamentally they apply equally to ourselves as they do to our enemies.
When you decided to enter this world, did you do so with the intention of weaseling your way in and becoming a mole so that you could one day undermine it with disclosures, or what was your perspective and mindset about it at the time that you first sort of got into this whole realm?
No, I joined the intelligence community when I was very young, sort of the government as a whole. I enlisted in the army shortly after the invasion of Iraq, and I believed in the goodness of what we were doing. I believed in the nobility of our intentions to free oppressed people overseas. But over time, over the length of my career, as I watched the news and I increasingly was exposed to true information that had not been propagandized in the media, that we were actually involved in misleading the public and misleading all publics, not just the American public, in order to create a certain mindset in the global consciousness. And I was actually a victim of that. America is a fundamentally good country. We have good people with good values who want to do the right thing. But the structures of power that exist are working to their own ends to extend their capability at the expense of the freedom of all publics.
Can you talk about what you think some of the most important primary documents are and what they reveal?
The primary disclosures are the fact that the NSA doesn't limit itself to foreign intelligence. It collects all communications that transit the United States. There are literally no ingress or egress points anywhere in the continental United States where a communication there enter or exit without being monitored and collected and analyzed. The Verizon document speaks highly to this because it literally lays out they're using an authority that was intended to be used to seek warrants against individuals, and they're applying it to the whole of society by basically subverting a corporate partnership through major telecommunications providers, and they're getting everyone's calls, everyone's call records, and everyone's internet traffic as well. On top of that, you've got Boundless Informant, which is sort of a global global auditing system for the NSA's intercept and collection system that lets us track how much we're collecting, where we're collecting, by which authorities, and so forth. The NSA lied about the existence of this tool to Congress and to specific congressmen in response to previous inquiries about their surveillance activities. Beyond that, we've got PRISM, which is a demonstration of how the U.S. government co-opts U.S. corporate power to its own ends. Companies like Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, they all get together with the NSA and provide the NSA direct access to the back ends of all of the systems you use to communicate, to store data, to put things in the cloud, and even just to send birthday wishes and keep a record of your life. And they give NSA direct access that they don't need to oversee, so they can't be held liable for it. I think that's a dangerous capability for anybody to have, but particularly an organization that's demonstrated time and time again that they'll work to shield themselves from oversight.
Was there a specific point in time that you can point to when you crossed the line from contemplation to decision making and commitment to do this?
I grew up with the understanding that the world I lived in was one where people enjoyed a sort of freedom to communicate with each other in privacy without it being monitored, without it being measured or analyzed or sort of judged by these shadowy figures or systems anytime they mention anything that travels across public lines. I think a lot of people of my generation, anybody who grew up with the internet, that was their understanding. As we've seen the internet and government's relation to the internet evolve over time, we've seen that sort of open debate, that free market of ideas, sort of lose its domain and be shrunk.
But what is it about that set of developments that makes them sufficiently menacing or threatening to you that you are willing to risk what you've risked in order to fight them?
I don't want to live in a world where everything that I say, everything I do, everyone I talk to, every expression of creativity or love or friendship is recorded. And that's not something I'm willing to support. It's not something I'm willing to build. And it's not something I'm willing to live under. So I think anyone who opposes that sort of world has an obligation to act in the way they can. Now, I've watched and waited and tried to do my job in the most policy-driven way I could, which is to wait and allow other people, you know, wait and allow our leadership, our figures, to sort of correct the excesses of government when we go too far. But as I've watched, I've seen that's not occurring. And in fact, we're compounding the excesses of prior governments and making it worse and more invasive, and no one is really standing to stop it.
And that, Edward Snowden, in the second part of an interview produced for the Guardian newspaper, which along with Glenn Greenwald has been providing a frontline reportage in regard to the NSA leaks that have been provided by whistleblower Edward Snowden. This is 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we are considering today the impact of the revelations that were, according to Edward Snowden, a matter of conscience and fidelity to the oath to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America from enemies abroad and within. And in the latest revelations, the Snowden leaks have revealed that the United States has been conducting high-intensity espionage on the people and communications of those in Brazil, as well as revealing the razzle-dazzle play in which Western intelligence agencies cooperate with each other, with European agencies monitoring United States traffic and then turning the results over to the NSA, CIA, FBI, DIA, Homeland Security, and other agencies. The purpose of this mechanism is to allow the Obama, the Bush, the Clinton, and other administrations to claim that they're not monitoring United States citizens, although Snowden's revelations have indicated that there have been billions of emails and phone calls monitored and stored for future analysis and selective retrieval by American intelligence agencies. He, in his most recent revelation, has indicated how German intelligence services are part of this network, arousing great consternation inside Germany over the history of espionage and civilian monitoring that goes all the way back to the Nazi regime and even more recently the Stasi intelligence apparatus. We are also very much concerned about the prospect for the asylum that is being sought by Mr. Snowden. And at our latest information, he has been offered the possibility of asylum in the nations of Nicaragua, Bolivia, and Venezuela. But the rub is whether or not he will be able, without his United States passport, to leave the international section of the airport in Moscow. And we're going to stay tuned to the latest developments on that. And also, we are hoping to get through to William Binney, the former National Security Agency employee of 30 years, who himself was a trailblazer, as it were, in his resignation in 2002 and his whistleblowing about an implementation more than a decade ago of the so-called Trailblazer Internet and Electronic Monitoring System about the activities and communications of U.S. citizens. William Binney is formerly with the National Security Agency, and we're very happy to say that we have him with us live here on 5 O'Clock Shadow. Welcome to the Shadow. This is Robert Knight on the Pacifica Radio Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is so great to have you here. I refer to you, and you may rue the reference, I refer to you as a trailblazer who preceded the revelations of Edward Snowden.
Yeah, that takes a separate path, I think.
Well, for the benefit of those recently joining us, why don't you take a moment to speak of your evolution? I refer to the way that one takes an oath to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution. And tell us how you became a NSA whistleblower and what the issues were at the time that you did so.
Well, you know, in government service, in the military, as well as the civilian employees of the government, you take that oath of office, which is really the same as the president. You swear to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that's like, your overall oath of office. The others that you take, of course, with the agencies, depending on the agency you're with, is to whether or not to protect and defend classified material. But overall, the ultimate oath is to the Constitution. In my experience at NSA, when they started spying on U.S. citizens, that was unconstitutional, even by the laws then. Our own USID 18 said that it was illegal to spy on U.S. citizens. Here we started spying on all of them. So that was clear that was unconstitutional. So that was something that was not legal for that agency to do, or in fact for our government, because that's an unconstitutional act. The people should have been impeached for that, and they weren't.
You were involved in Trailblazer and the selection of that as one of the precursors of what we are hearing about now, and you had worked on an alternative system called Thin Thread, did you not?
Yes, that was they used the Thin Thread program, or part of it, the back end of it, to do the spying on U.S. citizens as well as everybody in the world. So it's not they didn't restrict it to anybody. I mean, all U.S. citizens now are treated the same as foreigners. I mean, I'm sure the foreigners would be happy to know that they're treated just like U.S. citizens. We're all the same. But our laws, of course, and Constitution say that we're not supposed to do that way. And that's what I've been trying to address all along. In fact, when they used that program to go against all U.S. citizens, I took that up with the House Intelligence Committee, the Inspector General, Department of Justice, and any numbers of members of Congress, and they all seem to all back away because they're so mesmerized by this this veil of Cygnus, this whole cloud that's covering national security. I mean, they keep claiming that they have to give up privacy to have security, and that's absolutely false. It has been from the very beginning, and we had shown how that would do. With thin thread, you could protect everybody's privacy in the world and still get the bad guys and do it legally and constitutionally. We showed that in that program, and they chose, the Bush administration chose to drop all the protections and collect everything on everybody they could get. And that was just too much of for me to even be associated with. I had to get out of there.
You refer to the anti-constitutional positions taken by members of Congress who are perhaps privy to briefings, but who have been, to a man and a woman, in my opinion, delinquent, absent from the protection of the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, and others about people's right to assembly and reasonable expectation of privacy against unwarranted search and seizure. You use the term that they are mesmerized by the national security state. I would pose to you, is there a possibility that they're also blackmailized by the security state, either through explicit threats or the fear of revelation?
Well, that is possible, because this is basically what we're creating here is a state that's the equivalent of a J. Edgar Hoover on super steroids. That is, J. Edgar Hoover had all kinds of leverage against Congress and against the administration, because he accumulated so much knowledge about them. And the same is going on here about everybody in the country, really, including the Congress. So certainly that's possible. I think, though, part of it also would be the technobabble that the intelligence community usually throws at Congress, and they use that to try to bamboozle them into getting what they want, too. So that's part of it. But there's another part that has to deal with the military-industrial intelligence complex, where they're spending tens of billions of dollars every year to support this large set of companies that are surrounding and supporting all these intelligence agencies. I mean, their budget now is over $80 billion a year. So over 12 years, that adds up to almost $1 trillion into this community. So there's a lot of vested interest to keep this kind of activity going, money-wise as well.
You hit upon a very important piece of the puzzle, and that is the corporate or commercial intervention in the violation of American citizens' privacy. And as you have well stated already, there is virtually no distinction to be made between non-nationals and citizens in the total data sweep. And in this total data sweep, you have companies like Google, which has among its board members many who are familiars of the intelligence community. And you have private corporations like Microsoft and Facebook and so many others almost volunteering or willfully sharing information, perhaps in anticipation of largesse or reward from the intelligence community. Can you speak a bit more about how the corporate and the military intelligence are of a piece?
Well, they're all pretty much, I mean, a lot of the intelligence work that was done at NSA is being outsourced to contractors now. So they're actually becoming a part of the organization. It's kind of hard to separate them now. I mean, here is Snowden, a fellow who was a system administrator, a corporate person from Booz Allen, working for NSA, supporting all of the major components, or a large number of major components of systems that were in operation there. So it tells you how closely they're getting intertwined now. And so what that means is those corporations that participate and play ball with NSA get contracts from NSA and therefore become a part of the family of NSA in terms of money distribution and payments and follow-on contracts. So it's almost like an incestuous relationship that's going on. that just perpetuates itself over time. As long as the money keeps flowing, everybody keeps happy, you know? So that's why I referred to it as the Happiness Management Program.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we're speaking with William Binney. He is a 30-year former employee of the National Security Agency and also man of conscience in his objections to the espionage process that was underway a decade and perhaps well more than that. And Bill, you need not be reminded that the Internet itself is a spinoff of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, DARPANET, and that Siri, the talking program in the Apple iPhone series, began as what was called in the military development circles PAL, Personal Assistant Learns. That's what that stood for. And now we're on the threshold of the ubiquity of Google Glass, a constant internet-informing video and audio recording system that reminds me of nothing more than the helmet cams that U.S. troops would wear in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever else they might be in optional wars around the world. And, of course, cell phones themselves are nothing but chatterboxes of secret information when you think you're only making a phone call. I refer to cell phones nowadays as ankle bracelets. So there is a whole new wave of technology that is being well marketed and eagerly accepted. What dangers do you see in this, and what kind of precautions might people take?
Well, it's really getting harder for people to take precautions because the devices you're buying are actually tracking devices as well as listening devices. So,
ankle bracelets.
I mean, the GPS in your cell phone will tell them to a couple of feet where you are throughout the day if you carry it with you. If you leave it somewhere or give it to somebody else, you could try to manipulate that path that they're trying to project for you, you know? So there's ways to kind of deceive them into thinking you're somewhere when you're not. For example, if you had a friend and he had a GPS phone, you just swap phones and you would go somewhere with his and he would go somewhere with yours. That would give them a mix up, you see, in terms of tracking you and of course your neighbor or your friend.
Crisscross face off.
Yeah.
Bill, I'd like to return to the state of ethical whistleblowing today in regard to Edward Snowden. There are some rumors that I'm beginning to hear that he may, and it's unconfirmed, may have accepted sanctuary in Nicaragua. That leaves still open, even if that is true, that possibility of the plane being tracked and stalked or forced down, as was done with the plane of the president of Bolivia over the past weekend. And can you address, number one, the plight of Edward Snowden, and at your pleasure, try to explain how far he has advanced the state of public knowledge in regard to privacy rights and espionage?
First of all, I think that what he's exposed in terms of information to the U.S. public is something that our government cannot deny. In other words, they've been able to, like, for example, all of the things I've been complaining about publicly that they've been doing, they could simply deny it, and I had no written evidence that would prove what I was asserting was true. But now that Edward Snowden has released for publication in The Guardian and The Post all of this information about these programs, it's difficult for the government to deny it now. So now they're trying to back up and see what they could admit to and openly or declassify, basically, within these programs. But still, it exposes them for what they've been doing for over 12 years now. Snowden's situation, I mean, it's fairly clear to me. I mean, after the example of the Bolivian president's plane being diverted is a clear case of how desperate they are to get him and get him off the street and keep him incommunicado. In other words, it's clear to me they want to take him just like they did Bradley Manning and put him in isolation somewhere so he can't talk to anybody. And also they want to find out and get a hold of all of the the laptop computers that he has, or and find out exactly how much data he does have. Mm-hmm. So I think they're desperate to get him.
One of the things that Julian Assange did during the early days of the release of the WikiLeaks documents, the cables from the State Department and other materials, was that there was created a large file, an encrypted file called insurance.aes. And Julian Assange is saying of Edward Snowden's information that there is no way of stopping it. Would you consider it a possibility or prudent that there might be such a file out there?
Well, I from listening to what Glenn Greenwald has talked about, it sounds like Snowden gave him a file of a lot of the information that he had, and it was all indexed by topic. So it seems to me that that he's already passed that information on to Glenn Greenwald and others, I assume, at the Post.
Hmm.
So I think it's already been provided to the folks who would, in fact, publish it.
Our guest is Bill Binney, a former veteran of the National Security Agency and himself a whistleblower. And one other thing, Bill, I understand that Sam Adams Associates has awarded Edward Snowden with a great honor.
Yes, they did. They just did that, yes.
Can you tell us about it, what it is?
Well, it's an award for being the truth teller, standing up and being a truth teller in this extremely devious and deceptive society we have. So, and basically for exposing the truth about what's going on, really, instead of being simply fed the line that the administration wants everybody to believe, now they can't deny what he's exposed. So he certainly, for that reason alone, has deserved that award for truth-telling.
Well, as do yourself and others of courage and ethics, from Daniel Ellsberg to Edward Snowden to yourself, of course, and Bradley Manning and so many others who help keep us aware of the clear and present dangers to our rights and privacy and the erosion, if not destruction, of key elements of the U.S. Constitution. Very honored to have had you on 5 O'Clock Shadow today, Bill. And why don't you tell people how they can directly follow your work?
Well, I don't have anything organized just yet. I mean, I'm just on, I go on radio whenever I'm invited or on TV, so I don't have I'm retired in place, so to speak, so I'm not really actively doing anything in particular,
mm-hmm.
Other than trying to keep active and keep trying to address these issues, because I think our form of government is really under great stress at the moment, and certainly heading in the wrong direction. I mean, the morals of this country, we're losing that whole moral position we used to have.
Hmm.
You know, I just it's really a shame that we're going down this path.
Well, it's an honor to have you to point the way out of that path, William Binney. Thank you once again for being on 5 o'clock Shadow.
Thank you.
I'm Robert Knight in New York, and the program originates at WBAI on the Pacifica Radio Network. And we referenced the piracy of the airlines with the abduction over the weekend, the forced landing of the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales. And we, since our last broadcast on these airwaves, were following the case of the forcing down of the Bolivian plane that was carrying the head of state from a meeting in Moscow. And that subject was covered in real time on our colleague program, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, in which there was a colloquy or a trilogy between myself, Dennis Bernstein, and Norman Solomon of RootsAction.net. Here is some of that as it unfolds.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Well, joining us in studio now is Norman Solomon, and you may have heard that a group of countries, apparently France, Portugal, and Spain, refused to allow a plane with the Bolivian president on to be in their airspace. The plane was ultimately forced down in Austria, right? Where did it go down?
Yes, the Associated Press is reporting the plane carrying the Bolivian president, Evo Morales, home from Moscow was rerouted to Austria today after France and Portugal refused to let it cross their airspace. And AP is adding because of suspicions that the NSA leaker Edward Snowden might be on board.
And joining us, Norman, just to give us a brief headline, and people will remember Robert Knight. He, for many years, did the Knight Report on Flashpoints. He's now the host, producer of the 5 O'Clock Shadow in our sister station at WBAM New York. Robert, I know I caught you on the road between here and there, but what's the best you can tell us about what we know now? I know you only have a minute or two, but give us your best shot.
Bill Dennis, I'm speaking to you from the streets of New York City, where I have been monitoring the situation in regard to the extraordinary rendition of the airplane of Bolivian President Evo Morales. As far as we understand right now, and please do understand, this is a breaking story minute by minute at this moment. According to the reports that we've been able to assemble thus far, the plane of President Morales, as you said, leaving Moscow for a meeting on gas exporters, was forced down in Vienna. Our understanding at this point in time is that the plane was denied airspace passage through Portugal and France and was allowed to refuel in Spain on its way to its ultimate impediment in Vienna, Austria. The purported cause of the rerouting and denial of airspace was because of what Bolivians are saying is a suspicion that the plane may have been carrying NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden from his thus far exile in the international part of the Moscow airport. The Bolivian government has issued a number of strong statements claiming that this diversion of the flight of a national president put President Evo Morales' life at risk. There are reports, as far as we know right now, that Mr. Snowden was not on board, that the Bolivian government is saying that it would not deceive international authorities in such a way. The Bolivian government, as far as we know at this point in time, has called for an emergency meeting of UNASUR, a group of Central and South American nations, and they are calling this an extraordinary violation of international protocols. The complicity of the Portuguese and French governments does suggest to some critical scholars that this may have been international diplomatic arm twisting by the Obama administration. You will recall, Dennis, that it was just a few days ago that Obama shrugged off what is a maximum concern of the national security state of America, that I'm not going to waste my time chasing down a 29-year-old. But remember also, Obama joked that in regard to his daughters, he had two words, drone strikes. So we are in totally uncharted international protocol territory.
All right. Robert Knight reporting from the streets of New York City on the fact that the plane carrying Evo Morales forced to land in Vienna at the airport there. We're guessing we don't really have the backstory on this, but one has to imagine that the U.S. government, its hands are and fingerprints are all over this action.
Some people are considering this piracy of the
air piracy. Robert, stand by. Norman Solomon's in the studio with us.
Yes, well, a statement has just been put out by the Bolivian defense minister, Ruben Saavedra. Quote, this is a hostile act by the United States State Department, which has used various European governments, unquote, a clear reference to Portugal and France, which suddenly, apparently, denied airspace on the pre-approved route of the president of Bolivia heading back home from Moscow. And I think it's quite notable, and Robert Knight referred to this, the statement a couple of days ago from President Obama that he wasn't going, and these were his words, we're not going to scramble jets over a 29-year-old hacker. Well, it's a remarkable achievement to have at least three major errors in 10 words from the president. First of all, he's now 30 years old, Edward Snowden is. Secondly, to call him a hacker when the president is essentially hacker-in-chief, overseeing the NSA, which has literally hacked into billions of emails by policy in this country and around the world. And the third is about scrambling the jets is a sort of a rhetorical flourish where we've already seen that quite a lot of airborne policy and aeronautic regulation has been scrambled, and I think fairly clearly under strong U.S. pressure in the case of the president of a country, that being Bolivia. So we're seeing just yet another indication how desperate and what a global reach the United States has that it's exerting to try to bring Edward Snowden back into the United States, where one can only assume he would be welcomed with the kind of treatment that Bradley Manning has gotten, the U.S. Army whistleblower, 9 months in solitary conditions that a United Nations human rights inspector said cruel and unusual and bordering, and many might say, over the line of torture.
Amazing. Robbie, final comments.
Well, what we are seeing is the establishment of an international security state. The members of the United States Congress, who are themselves potentially susceptible to blackmail, have, from conservative to liberal, including Al Franken and Dianne Feinstein, defended the security state and condemned the whistleblower, Edward Snowden. We are in uncharted territory, Dennis, in which the Fourth Amendment, the laws of the United States, and force makes right is now the emblem of the Obama administration.
You got it. Robert Knight reporting from the streets of New York City. Thanks, Robert.
And good evening. Something I would add in here, that of course we have a huge problem with the single most powerful senator on surveillance and civil liberties issues. That would be Dianne Feinstein, representing, of course, the state of California. And we also have not only the avowedly right-wing Republican members of Congress supporting the surveillance state, but we also have many who we should be hearing from who are not speaking up or not speaking up assertively. And let me say that as this week began, I went to the website of perhaps overall the most progressive member of Congress. She here in California representing the East Bay and the San Francisco area, Barbara Lee. And I looked for a news release statement issued in the last month on her website. There are quite a few of them. Since the revelations began, courtesy of Edward Snowden and the Washington Post and especially the Guardian, there is not a single news release statement from Congresswoman Barbara Lee on the issue of civil liberties, surveillance, or the NSA. She did issue one brief statement that was quite good to the San Francisco Chronicle in early June, simply saying that privacy is non-negotiable. But what we're lacking is a willingness of even the best members of Congress, with hardly any exceptions, to speak up with the vehemence that this abrogation and assault on the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Bill of Rights would seem to call for if we're going to be real about what's at stake.
All right. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I'm delighted to have Norman Solomon, who is a co-founder of RootsAction.org, a media, longtime media columnist, activist, and has many times put his own life in jeopardy, committing civil disobedience and around various crucial issues. Let's step back a moment and get a little context in terms of what led up to this moment today.
Yes, because if we look at what we have learned in the last month about the details of NSA surveillance, courtesy of Edward Snowden, who, unlike many whistleblowers, actually stepped forward with just enormous courage to say, yes, I was the leaker. Yes, I made this information available to the people of the United States and the world. We've learned a lot of details about the U.S. government surveillance through the NSA, primarily of the records of when people called, who they called, where they called from, where the locations were, the so-called metadata, which is absolutely devastating in terms of privacy. We've learned about this tremendous vacuuming up into the billions of email messages by the NSA. And we've learned about a tremendous surveillance apparatus, which is, I think, far beyond what even many of us who had a sort of a dystopian vision of our current situation could have really imagined. You know, this was not possible 10 or 12 years ago, just because of the digital technology has advanced, if you want to call it that. And the political response, I think, has been so telling, because even though there has been some real shock and outrage, including in muted form from some members of Congress, overall, we've seen a tremendous retrenchment and pushback from the Obama administration. Of course, many Republicans on Capitol Hill doing so very strongly, but also quite a few Democrats, and then a sort of a muted criticism of this surveillance state, which is really ratcheted up so strongly. And I think today's breaking news can be understood in that context, because clearly there is rage in official Washington that Edward Snowden slipped through the net, that 8 days ago he eluded the tightening noose as the U.S. government was attempting to bring to bear on him in Hong Kong. He got on that plane to Moscow, and now the U.S. government is pulling out all the stops to pressure any country in the world, any government that would presume that it might give refuge, might give political asylum to somebody charged with the quote-unquote crime of informing the American people, who are supposed to be in a country governed through the consent of the governed, to actually let us know what our government is doing in our names with our tax dollars, violating our Bill of Rights.
Well, Bill of Rights, and of course, as you mentioned, it's not just our country.
Yeah.
This is, I thought it was beyond pathetic in terms of Obama's response.
Well, everybody does it.
Yeah. What's the problem?
Well, this is
I'm sure I was bugged this morning.
This is a parallel where the U.S. government, because of its technical and diplomatic and military prowess, is the preeminent hacker of text messages and emails and phone calls around the planet. And as I said in an interview with RT, the Russian network television yesterday, the Chinese government does it and it's wrong. The Russian government does it and it's wrong. The American government does it and it's wrong. And the American government is the superpower of surveillance around the planet. So if we're going to have a single standard in terms of the rights of privacy and civil liberties and so forth, the biggest menace in this world is the United States government. So when we look now at the United States regime, if you want to call it that, whatever you might call it, the Obama administration and the power structure that includes the NSA in Washington, its insistence that wherever Edward Snowden is on the planet, he must be denied sanctuary, he must be brought back to the United States, that runs parallel with the attitude and the implementation of the policy that there is no place on earth, that the NSA does not have the right, even implicitly the duty, to have your text messages, your phone calls, and your emails bugged.
Now, and it's interesting, strange bedfellows, maybe not so strange. We've got Vladimir Putin in Russia saying, well, he'd let Snowden stay. He sort of agrees with the United States. He'd let Snowden stay if he just shut his mouth. So here now, we're brothers in arms.
Yes, and this is a real problem because, of course.
But just to say, yes. Putin is a killer. You know, he is a former KGB person, and there ain't no freedom for anybody who tries to talk about him in that country.
And the war on terrorism, so-called, that was reinforced by the slaughter of people in Chechnya by the Kremlin under Putin. So I'm afraid that there is no sort of heroic government that we can point to that we say, no matter what, they're going to be able to stand up to the United States, even if they want to. And I really think this is a reminder for progressives and anybody who cares about civil liberties that we must avoid this notion that when we understand the U.S. government is an enemy of civil liberties, which has become very clear, we must avoid this temptation to fall into the enemy of my enemy is my friend. There is a conflict between the people in Moscow and the people in Washington. That doesn't make the people in Moscow our friends. The same goes with those in Beijing. And there is also, unfortunately, a lack of capacity for countries such as Ecuador to really resist the all-out pressure of the United States. We've seen that where the president of Ecuador has said in the last day that issuing travel documents to Edward Snowden to get out of Hong Kong was a mistake. Well, that might have something to do with the call from Joe Biden to turn the screws on the president of Ecuador just in the last couple of days. So it's a reminder to us how important it is for us as people in the United States to insist that democracy must be brought to bear on a U.S. government that is flagrantly, with cruise missiles, with drone strikes, with deployment of troops, with surreptitious activities by the CIA, and also with this massive surveillance of the planet, we are in a position, if anybody is, to restrain this massive violator of human rights, and that would be the United States government.
And I'm concerned, Norman, that a driving force in Obama's ability to continue is the endlessly forgiving liberal community, his supporters. The kinds of defenses I've heard of this from people who I never expected to hear. I'm not going to name names here, but the kind of bending over backwards so far, you've got to break your spine to somehow defend what Obama has been doing is beyond belief.
Yes, we've got to snap out of any tendency to accept a policy which is reprehensible because we like the person or think that we have reason to like the person who happens to be president. Yeah, and so if you just step back and you look at this massive surveillance program, which has been by any measure extended in the last 4.5 years by this administration, and just step back and think, now what if it was McCain? What if it was Romney? What if it was Bush instead of Obama in the Oval Office? It is no more acceptable, no matter what the party or persona of the president. And this gets down to matters of life and death in terms of endless war, and it goes back to civil liberties. And if we're going to retain the actuality of these precious amendments that we call the Bill of Rights, particularly the First, Fourth, and Fifth, then it is essential for us to say, you know what, we stand on principle. And that includes calling to account every member of Congress and senator who claims to represent us. And I'm talking about Barbara Lee. We're broadcasting from her district in the East Bay. But throughout California and the country, there are members of Congress who should be getting our phone calls and letters, and we should not let them wriggle off the hook. All the platitudes don't do it. There's an Obama administration perpetrating the surveillance state, and it has to be challenged on that basis.
If all of these revelations came out under Bush 1, Bush 2, imagine if this came out under Shrub. All these liberals, all these people, or whatever you can call yourself, and that's okay with me, we'd be like, how could this Republican do this?
Well, there's that important principle, be here now. And that means being real about the political circumstances. Not that we wish we were in or we expected that we'd been, but where we are now. If you go back to the huge story, which was delayed a year by the New York Times, but did break in late 2005, revealing the NSA spying on Americans, the wiretapping and so forth. Remember the huge uproar that was under President Bush. And then we had candidate Obama for president saying, I am opposed to illegal infringement on people's privacy rights. I am opposed to illegal wiretapping. We didn't understand what he was saying. We had a tendency to believe that in 2008, what Obama was saying was, he didn't want that kind of surveillance to go on because it was illegal. What we now know, and it's very clear, is that President Obama does not want that surveillance to be illegal. He wants it to be legalized. In fact, he voted for that, the FISA legislation, in the middle of 2008 as a senator. That's where we are now. These surveillance measures, no matter what secret handpicked court says, they are unconstitutional. They are fundamental violations of our rights.
And this is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. We've been listening to contemporaneous coverage of the force down of the airplane of the Bolivian president, Evo Morales. And perhaps this is a timely review because of reports that may or may not be true that Edward Snowden in the Moscow airport may have accepted asylum from one of the countries known to have offered it, those being Bolivia, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. He will face, if he does obtain travel documents, the same kind of coercion as President Barack Obama placed upon President Evo Morales. The European nations have proven themselves to be all too compliant with the bullying of the Obama administration and the State Department. The calls for extradition and arrest for Snowden have been rejected, however, by the governments of Ireland and the government of Venezuela. But the logistical issue remains, how does Mr. Snowden, if he does accept sanctuary or asylum in Central or South America, how does he fly from Moscow? And over what nations? And would the plane be forced down? That is the question. And another logistical issue facing Mr. Snowden is whether there can be a plane with enough fuel to fly out over the ocean and not cross any other national territory. And, of course, the fate of such a flight with the United States Air Force and other agencies still places him in quite a bit of uncertainty and jeopardy. I'd like to thank our engineer, Sean Rhodes, and invite you to tune in for another episode of the Constitution Eroding on 5 O'Clock Shadow. And that concludes today's 5 O'Clock Shadow. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins, Reggie Johnson, and Sean Rhodes. We welcome your comments, questions, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.